Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha from Hawaii, and aloha, welcome back to the show. We're going to go back to the phones, and we have got Sam. I got to scroll back up here on this thing. Sam in Massachusetts. Aloha, Sam. What's the weather like back there, and what's on your mind?
Aloha, Mike. The weather is absolutely terrible. It seems like every other day we get at least about like 4 inches of snow, at least. We just had a bad storm last night into this morning. The roads are terrible. You know, they don't do anything about it. Everyone has to go to work, school, and it's just awful. We're slipping and sliding all over the place. And we're expected to get, you know, a good 6 inches more tonight, so, and then the next day. So it's just bad. But I just wanted to call you and talk about, you know, the value of currency. And I have a kind of a small coin collection, but I have a few silver dollars and stuff, and I was looking online. I think it's pathetic that the actual coin, the metal, is worth more than what it would be used to spend, you know? It's just ridiculous. And I was just looking at all the values. Like, even the pure metal of some of these coins that were valued at a dollar, they're like, I have some, you know, like $11 now. It's just, it's ridiculous. But,
well, you need to understand, when this country was started, that value of silver, that was the dollar. The word dollars, literal definition, is a weight measure of silver going all the way back to the Thaler silver mines in Germany, which would produce their product in these cast coins of a uniform size and thickness that became the standard unit of exchange through the Spanish mill dollar and the German taler and all the way back to the U.S. American dollar. That's the original meaning of the word dollar, is a weight of silver. And that amount of silver in that silver dollar is the dollar. Not the coin, not the pretty engraving.
Right.
The actual silver is the dollar. That word has been co-opted by the Federal Reserve. Now dollar simply means whatever they decide that it means. And it isn't that the silver is now worth more than the face value of the coin. It's that the dollar that we see today, which is no longer tied to the metal, is worth that much less. The U.S. dollar has lost something like 96% of its total value since the Federal Reserve came into existence.
Right, and I just had kind of like a hypothetical question as to, you know, what would happen if we got rid of the Federal Reserve. You know, would there be any like a negative effect to it, like initially?
Well, we'd have to be prepared to do the transition smoothly, but remember, we've had three of these private central banks, and the first two got shut down without bringing down the country with it. My fear is that if we do not shut down this Federal Reserve, we will lose the country. We're on the verge of seeing the entire nation collapse because the money addicts will not let go.
Yeah, and I was listening to, I think it was Friday's show, and about the cash for tools. And I'm seeing the same ads and everything, and it's absolutely terrible. You know, they just strip us away from everything.
The country's being strip mined,
and
because we're not producing anything anymore, so we're just being looted for what few things we have left that are worth anything. Our gold, our jewelry. There's an ad that's running here in the local Hawaiian market about how's that? Oh, you've broken up with that guy. You don't want to keep the jewelry he gave you. Bring it on down to this metals place, and we'll melt it down, and you can just stand there and scream how much you hate the guy. And, you know, they're playing on the emotional stress of a breakup to get women to basically turn their jewelry in. And
right,
for
yeah.
pennies on the
People
dollar.
Should just be keeping that, yeah.
Yeah, you should be keeping anything of hard value that you can use to bribe your way through a security gate. Yeah, you want to keep your very best tools. You want to keep all your jewelry, all your silver coins, and all the rest of that stuff. This paper they're printing out is completely worthless. You also want to hang on to as many canned foods as you can get. And please keep an eye on those shelf dates. Some of these products, even though they're in cans, they don't last all that long. Okay, Sam, we're going to let you go. We got to take a commercial break. We'll be right back after these words from our sponsors.
The Grainmaker Grain Mill. Handmade goodness since 1999. Handcrafted stainless steel and high-quality alloys. There has not been a finer grain mill made right here in the great state of Montana. Hand-operated, the grain mill does it all. Wheat, corn, peanut butter, rye, rice, coffee, beans, flaxseed, all grain types. Make your own gluten-free flour. Experience the satisfaction of providing wholesome, nutritious foods for your family without additives or preservatives. Each mill is handcrafted with manufacturer's lifetime warranty. To order your grain mill, call us at 1-800-724-2719 or go to our online store, republicbroadcasting.org. Take a look at why this grain mill will be passed down through generation.
Introducing IXL Anti-Friction Metal Conditioner. IXL works at the molecular level to reduce friction by penetrating into and bonding onto the microscopic openings of the walls of ferrous base metals. The surfaces become smoother and denser, and this reduces the heat, friction, metal expansion, and wear caused by moving metal surfaces. The benefits are reduced maintenance activities and cost, increased fuel efficiency, and prolonged equipment life. It will not clog filters, pipes, injectors, or supply lines, does not build up or accumulate upon itself as do many other additives. IXL does not contain moly, PTFE, or graphites. Also offers the tremendous benefits of being non-toxic. It's used for a friction reducer and performance enhancer in gas or diesel engines, transmissions, automatic or standard gearboxes, turbos, electric motors, outdrives, lathe, and cutting applications. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, then to our online store, or call us at 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means...
Which means they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Americans who own guns, people like you and me, prevent over 1 million violent crimes every year. Get the facts on gun control. Visit armedandsecure.org. That's armedandsecure.org.
When all this twisted steel was swept away, did these remaining holes reveal what really happened?
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're going to talk to Jim in New Hampshire. Aloha, Jim. Welcome to the show. What part of New Hampshire are you calling from?
I'm calling from Nashua.
Oh, I know it well. I know it well. You know where Loudoun is?
Loudoun, not familiar, no.
Northeast of Concord.
Northeast of Concord. Oh, yeah, okay, I know what Concord is.
Yeah, it's a little tiny, if you drive past it, you're through it in about 2.5 minutes, you know, but that's where I grew up as a kid. We did 4-H and the whole thing. Anyway, what's on your mind today?
Well, your last caller was talking about silver, how remarkable it is that silver's up to around, I think it's 27 an ounce today or close to that. And it used to be worth a dollar. And another thing of note is the value of the current nickel and the value of pennies minted prior to 1982. Mm-hmm. I think one of the signs we're going to see that things are becoming really bad and that'll become more obvious to ordinary people is a change in composition of circulating coins, especially the penny and the nickel. The rest of them are still pretty low. But melt value of the metals in the nickel comes out to more than 5 cents, and I mean, not to mention production costs. And yeah. I believe there's some speculation going around too about Obama may have planned to change the composition actually in 2011 or moving forward anyway. I was wondering your thoughts on that.
Well, at this point, because the metal content of the money is no longer an issue, in terms of the coin's value. I mean, anything that they the biggest problem they face, of course, is getting the vending machines to continue to use them. And back in 1964, when they started dropping the silver and going with those clad copper slugs, one of the biggest headaches they had was to go around to all the vending machine companies and make sure that the vending machines were going to take these new coins and not reject them as being obviously counterfeit. And that was a real big headache. So when he changes the composition of the coins and the bills, you know, may make them more durable, may make them less expensive to produce. I personally don't have a problem with it. I think the one thing that I decry, and I know this is going to sound a little weird, but, you know, because I grew up in the era of silver coinage, I remember when American coins really were little tiny miniature works of art. And one of the problems that they had to deal with when they started doing the clad coinage, it severely limited how deep they could strike the coins, or else they would tear the cladding and reveal the copper underneath and make it look really terrible. So as a result, America's coins these days kind of look like gas station game tokens, like the Mr. President coin game, which was sort of a big thing when I was a kid. And I sort of miss those days of really well-made coins, but that's just purely aesthetic. If you ever get a chance to go to Munich, visit the Residence Museum, they have a coin collection there that shows the absolute pinnacle of what medallic art is capable of when it's done well, and it's just amazing to see that stuff. But I digress. I don't have a problem with them changing the formulation of the metals in the coins to make them more durable and less expensive to produce, because the coins aren't themselves worth anything anymore. The time to have kicked up a fuss would have been back when the silver was being taken out and we were being told by the media that these copper-clad slugs are just as good and worth just as much, and your money will always still have the same buying power. And, of course, we know now that that was a complete crock here. One thing that I really do think they ought to consider is abandoning paper for the paper notes entirely. If you go to some countries like down in Australia, their notes are now printed on polymer, a clear, durable plastic, which allows these little coated windows on them and even little braille markings. They notch the edges of the notes so that visually challenged people are able to determine the denominations. It's a very well thought out monetary system down there in terms of the actual physical instrument. And I think the United States ought to consider doing that as well.
Yeah, and the paper money will last a lot longer, too.
The polymer money lasts a lot longer, yeah. And it survives being folded and certainly survives going through the washing machine.
Yeah. One other thing I think, though, about the coins, if they do change the composition, it's going to be something that hasn't changed in a long time. The change of the penny in 1982 wasn't a huge difference because the weight is very close to the same. It's kind of hard to notice. But if they change, you've seen some coins from foreign countries that use really cheap materials, almost feel like plastic.
Yes.
If the nickel is changed to something like that, I feel like people will notice. It won't be something that will just get by the public, and they'll wonder what's going on. I mean, at this moment, the prices of copper and nickel are continuously rising, and it'll bring that issue to people's attention, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, you know, there isn't that much copper in the American coinage anymore anyway, and I think people will notice, like they noticed the copper edges on the quarters back in 1964, and the media will say, don't worry, it's just as good, and people will say, okay, yeah, it's just as good, and they'll move on from there. I think most Americans understand the physical makeup of the coin is no longer an issue. You know, back when they took the silver out of the money and gave us these slugs, you know, people were upset, and justifiably so in hindsight. Today, they're replacing one counterfeit slug with another counterfeit slug. I don't think it's really a big deal, and I don't really think people are going to notice. All they have to do is change the design on the coin itself, and people will say, oh, it's a new coin, and it feels different because it is different, and that'll be the end of that.
Yeah, you can notice, actually, that's been done with a lot of the dollar coins they've come out with recently. If you look at coinflation.com, which is my benchmark for this, you know, the metallic values, the dollar coins, the Sacagawea dollar, the presidential dollar, all show that the metals, the actual metals used in them, are a much smaller percent of value compared to even the quarter and the dime, which are worth a very small percentage of the face value. It's kind of interesting. It seems like that's the trend, and they're just going to continue it. Yeah, it'll be a new design.
Yeah, they're just game tokens now. There is no inherent worth in the money. They're just game tokens, and they're going to make them as cheaply as they can. As long as they make them durable, and as long as it's not going to mess up the vending machines. You know, at some point down the road, they're going to try and force us all to use a little plastic card so the banks get a piece of the action, even when we're buying a newspaper.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Okay?
All right, well, Michael, thanks for taking me on. And
all right, thanks an awful lot, Jim. Careful of that big blizzard that's coming down on your part of the country right now. We're going to switch over to Jeff in Ontario. Aloha, Jeff. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mr. Rivero. Thank you very much for taking my phone call today. What I wanted to do was just ask for your help, in a way, in making people aware of an event that's taking place this Monday coming up, January 31st in Washington, D.C. at 10 a.m. concerning justice and accountability for the victims and family members that lost their loved ones in the events of 9/11. Mr. John,
where are you meeting?
They're meeting at 10 a.m. at Lafayette Park.
Okay.
And Mr. John Gold, a 9/11 peace and justice activist, in a symbolic gesture of civil disobedience, will be chaining himself to the fence of the White House in protest of the lack of, you know, justice and accountability concerning the answers we've been, well, the lack of answers that we've got concerning 9/11 and what actually did happen on September 11th, 2001. And I noticed that you seem to be a very sincere person when it comes to, you know, getting to the real story of what happened and throwing and denouncing all these stupid theories about that day, especially with what happened at the Pentagon. So
yeah,
that's why I was calling you and just hoping you could help get the word out about John Gold's symbolic gesture of, you know, what he's going to do this Monday.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. First of all, our audience has already heard this. If you will email me the information, I will put it up at my website. Maybe we'll, despite the weather, hopefully we'll get a turnout there. And all I'm going to ask in return is that you shoot a bunch of pictures and send them off to me so I can put them up at my website, okay?
That sounds like a great deal, Mr. Rivero. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much. We're going to switch over to George in Texas. Aloha, George. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing fine.
Well, you know, the thing is, I'm sitting there looking at this attack, and it looks like I'm looking at the long-term consequences. And I can tell you one thing. There is a lot of circles of power around the world that want Russia destabilized.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I think this attack is probably the beginning. Probably Israel probably wanted to stabilize Russia, because I think a lot, like Gorbachev wants the stabilization of Russia because the bankers want control of their money supply.
Mm-hmm.
And their natural resources.
Okay.
No, but that's the way I see it. So, like, it's more like they wanted the stabilization. I mean, even Gorbachev said this, that a warning that Medvedev and Putin might have their country destabilized over the economic ramifications or crisis. I mean, they're trying to create.
Remember that Putin was the primary motivating force behind the ejection of the Russian oligarchs, which is Russian speak for money addicts, and getting rid of those money addicts, those top 20, 30 money addicts, you know, some of them were charged with fraud, as they should have been, and thrown in jail, and the rest fled. Some of them, a lot of them went back to Israel. Some of them came to the United States because there's outstanding warrants for them in Israel. But once he got those money addicts out of his country, the Russian economy was able to pull together very quickly in the aftermath of the collapse of the Soviet Union. And they've paid off their national debt in what, 3 years is all it took to pay off their debts. How long has the United States been struggling to pay off the debts from the Federal Reserve? Almost 100 years, and we're in deeper than when we started. Clearly, Russia knows how to do something that we don't know how to do, and we should be paying attention.
And I really think this attack, I think, is the start of trying to destabilize the country. They want that.
Russia?
Yes.
I don't think so. I think this one attack, I mean, if there were multiple, Russia's a big country. If there were multiple attacks all across the country, I would say yes. This is just a flat-out act of terror, and I really do think it was Israel's giving the finger to Medvedev for daring to recognize Palestine. The timing is just way too close. There are no other convenient boogeymen that they can pin this on. And even the Russian media is being very careful to not say that the terrorists were specifically Muslim. And I think they're sending a message, especially with this focus on the security department. I think they're sending a message. They know what really happened. George, we got to let you go. We're going to take a break for commercials. We'll be back with John in Tennessee.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! Huh. For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Are skyrocketing prescription costs draining your budget? If you don't have insurance or are taking medication not covered by insurance, the Powerhouse Savings Card can lower your prescription costs by up to 50%. Now you and your family can save 20 to 50% on all prescriptions. It's accepted by most pharmacies and mail-order pharmacies nationwide. No prescription card is easier to use. Just show your card and save 20 to 50% right on the spot. There are no monthly fees, just a one-time processing fee of only $4.95 for you and your immediate family. Stop paying full price for prescriptions. Stop going without the medication you need because it costs too much. Now your family can get the prescriptions they need at a cost you can afford. Call 1-800-963-0232 now and start saving money with the Powerhouse Savings Card. Call 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232.
Do you know the truth about cancer treatments? Do you realize that with all presently accepted methods, you are not correctly attacking the cancer and you are mostly fighting to survive the treatment? Do you realize that mutilating surgery, burning and poisoning of your entire system are totally unnecessary? But now it's cancer's turn to die with LaserMed Incorporated's patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at our physician's office. Laser technology at its best. For more information, visit www.lasermedinc.com on the web. That's www.lasermedinc.com.
Call now, 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528.
Spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. Do we have a caller on the line, John from Tennessee, or did he just leave a question? Okay, apparently John in Tennessee was, we were talking about the coinage and the debasement of the coinage, which originally, under U.S. law, that was a death penalty offense if you took the silver out of the coinage. And then when the private central reserve came in, Congress changed the law and said, yeah, it's okay to cheapen up the coins. And so John in Tennessee was saying, you mean they're taking something that is worthless and making it worth even less than worthless? And, of course, the answer to that is, yeah, that's exactly what they're doing. The changes to the coinage now, it's a waste of time to get upset. The time to get upset would have been when they took us off the silver and gold standards, which took the control of the value of the money away from you and put it in the hands of the bankers and the government. That's really what happened. As long as the money was based on silver and you had that silver in your hand, the worth of it was under your control. There was nothing the bankers could do, there was nothing the government could do that would make this silver dollar worth any less. This is why even after Rome fell, the silver and bronze coinage that Rome had issued was still used as a medium of exchange because the worth was in the metal. Bronze was a very expensive metal back then, and so was silver. And the unit of worth was the coin itself, not the promise of the government, not the promise of the bankers. when they took the silver out of the money, when they took away the silver certificates and gave us Federal Reserve notes instead, that's when we all got robbed. Because from that day onward, it doesn't matter how many of these pretty printed pieces of paper you have in your pocket, the bankers and the government can change how much they're worth by remote control, simply by turning on that printing press. And they've been doing it. Since the Federal Reserve came into existence, the U.S. dollar has lost about 94% of its value. Because it's no longer based on anything of any worth, it is a unit of debt. And the bankers get to play their speculative game, and all the silver and gold and all the real valuables travel toward them, and all the debts travel toward you. Now, silver and gold is the money of kings. Paper money is the money of free citizens. But debt is the money of slaves, and that's exactly where you are right now. All righty, let's see. Poor Richard from France. Bonjour, mon ami. What's on your mind?
Well, hi, Mike. A few days ago, there was a post on your site about how Ireland was like printing its own euro coins and paper currency.
They're not euros.
They're not euros? Yes, they are. It looks like they are euros.
Okay.
In other words, all the different states of Europe, they all put their own little coinage on their coins and their bills. But a guy named Ness on your site made a comment that the Europeans were keeping a hold of the euros from Germany and France and spending all the flaky all the other cash from the flaky countries that were about to go bankrupt. My question is, if the states here in the United States print our own money, when they go bankrupt, will their currency turn to poo too? And what is the money that the states create is backed by? Is that the property of the state? And that's kind of my question.
That's a very, very complicated question. First of all, let's back up a little bit. It is true that all the member states of the European Union print their own euro coins.
Yep.
Which is part of their unified economy. And in theory, all euro coins are worth the same anywhere in the European Union.
Okay.
That's the way that's supposed to work. So there are no euro coins from any one country that are worth any less than the euro coins of other countries. The real wealth, of course, does move from the more prosperous countries to the less prosperous countries, which is why countries like Germany are starting to talk about leaving the European Union. The article about Ireland printing its own currency is they're considering dropping the euro. They're considering dropping the use of the central bank and going back to a government-issued currency for the people to use free of interest. Same system we started this country with. They're moving away from that private central bank. That's
good for them.
There. Yeah, very much good for them. Now, here in the United States of America, we've got more and more states starting to talk about printing their own money. Virginia is planning on doing it. I'm trying to get Hawaii to start realizing they've got a plan for that now and not wait until the last minute. And when they do, the way it works very simply is the money is the property of whoever happens to have it at the moment. The way the system works with a government-issued currency, the government creates the currency, silver coins, gold coins, puka shells with an official State of Hawaii seal on them, whatever people will accept. They're spent into circulation by the government to get whatever the government needs, new roads, new schools, pay the teachers.
Okay.
The money circulates through society, allowing people to conduct commerce without paying an interest charge on the use of that money, and then it is taxed back to the government at the end of the year in order to zero out the books. That's the way it was set up in the United States of America. We got to take a break here. Don't go away, Richard. When we come back, I'll explain the difference with the private central bank.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Help, I've fallen and I can't get up. If you have an elderly loved one, please listen. Whether it's fire danger, a serious fall, or other type of home emergency, Life Alert is there for you. The company with the slogan, Help, I've Fallen and I Can't Get Up, protects 60,000 members.
The first time I fell in that bedroom and I couldn't reach the phone.
When you have a heart attack like I did and there's no one there, Life Alert was there for me.
Having a secure feeling through Life Alert is ideal.
My independence is possible because of it.
Listen to former U.S. Surgeon General Dr. C. Everett Koop.
Thanks to Life Alert, you can live alone without ever being alone. That's why I wear one.
With Life Alert protection, elderly people can often postpone going to a nursing home for several years. For a free brochure about Life Alert service, call now 1-800-410-0739. 1-800-410-0739. Call Life Alert now for your free brochure, 1-800-410-0739.
This is an important message from HempUSA.org. For our listeners who are advancing in age, baby boomers, and to all who want to be healthy, we urge you to try our microplant powder and see the difference it makes in your life. Please visit HempUSA.org and read about microplant powder. It's easy to take, one heaping tablespoon in any liquid three times a day. Call 908-691-2608 or visit HempUSA.org. Please inform your family, friends, and relatives about this incredible product. It can change your life if you give it a chance. So try microplant powder today. Call 908-691-2608. In this toxic world, microplant powder can help now in cleaning out heavy metals, parasites, viruses, fungus, and bacteria. Please download our catalog at hempusa.org today.
Don't answer it.
If fear strikes your heart when the phone rings, knowing it may be another bill collector, it's time for you to call Zero Debt in 90 Days. 800-477-9256. Settlements, bankruptcy, and attorneys are not the answer and may end up costing you up to 10 times more than necessary. Listen, if you're already in debt, does it make sense to get buried in another payment plan? Zero Debt in 90 Days gets you out of debt in 90 days guaranteed without a payment plan and without attorneys or going to court. Get the fastest relief from debt on the planet when you call 800-477-9256. If you have debt with the IRS, credit cards, student loans, or a foreclosure, we can help at Zero Debt in 90 Days, and we are the only organization to provide written guarantees on the results. Go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. That's ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Or call now for free information. 800-477-9256. That's 800-477-9256.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something, by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone, I mean the panic is on.
Show here. We're talking with Poor Richard from France. Actually, we're all poor now. And by the way, before we get back to the Federal Reserve situation, there was that wonderful pamphlet, Indignity Now or something like that, was written in French by a surviving member of the French underground who fought against the Nazis. It's a little pamphlet. It's a runaway success in France. We've got an English translation of it on the front page of whatreallyhappened.com. It is very inspirational to read. It is, I think, on the order of Common Sense by Thomas Paine, where it simply lays out, we are in a modern fight against fascism, Nazism, whatever you want to call it. We're in a fight against it, and we all need to be part of the resistance. I know over at Alex Jones, he's trying to sell posters with the V on there and remind everybody of the psychological devastation when the V was everywhere, which, of course, is a theme the movie V for Vendetta used, is that the government saw the V everywhere and knew they were surrounded and so forth and so on. And I wish Alex a lot of luck with his poster campaign, but obviously just a V of any kind, you know, with the circle in it, is going to start sending a message. And it is psychologically devastating to an occupying force to constantly see the signs of resistance on every wall around them. It reminds them they're being watched. The enemy is somewhere nearby waiting for them to make a mistake. And it is a form of psychological warfare. And the government and the media are using psychological warfare on the people. It is only just and fair and natural for the people to use psychological war back against them. And again, I didn't mean to run off on this tangent here, but bear with me, poor Richard, because I want to make a point. I was having a discussion with Claire the other day. We were talking about avoiding violence in these situations and how well that worked with Gandhi. And the point I made in my discussion with Claire is Gandhi's nonviolent approach worked because he understood when you're going to revolt against an occupying power, you cannot have the revolution they're already prepared to fight against. The British, because of years of colonial behavior, including here in the United States of America, their attitude is anybody says no to the king, you shoot them. And they'll shoot back and we'll shoot again, because we've got more bullets and bigger guns, and we will win and we will prevail. And Gandhi understood that if he fought the war the British were prepared to fight, he was going to lose. And the same is certainly true here and now. The government is preparing to fight a war against the American people. They're getting the guns, they're getting the tasers, they're getting those water cannon things, they're getting the LRADs, they're getting all of that stuff to deal with wild confrontational crowds. And the only way we will prevail is if we fight the revolution in a way that the U.S. government has not prepared for, which is why I keep saying this revolution will not be won with guns and bombs and bullets. It will be won, is being won, with keyboards. We just need to stay focused. As long as we avoid the war the U.S. government is prepared to fight, we will win. All right, now back to you, Richard. As I said before, the way the United States government was originally set up, the government created the money it needed and spent it into circulation.
Mm-hmm.
That flowed through circulation free of interest, was taxed back to the government to balance the books at the end of the year. And it was a zero-sum game, because the same money, volume of money that went out is the same volume of money that came back in. With a private central bank, the private bankers say, oh, we can make more money for you than you could otherwise spend. That's how governments get suckered into these things. Give us a license to counterfeit so that the people don't think you're the ones doing the counterfeiting, and we'll just make money pour all over you. And so what it is the government goes to this private central bank and borrows the money it needs to operate at interest. Then it spends that borrowed money into circulation. And while it's out there circulating around, it continues to accrue more interest. Then the government taxes it back at the end of the year, but they have to tax back more money than they spent in order to pay the interest back to the private central bank. That's really the only two differences between the system. In one, the government and the people are working with a balanced flow of revenue. In the other, you've got a system that is drawing more and more money to the private bank, because everything in circulation is not a unit of value, it's a unit of debt. And it is a trap, because the instant this first pretty printed piece of paper goes into circulation, more money is owed to the bank than is actually in existence. When we talk about the trillions and trillions of dollars of accumulated debt, we're talking about all that imaginary money that never existed at all except as an entry on the interest charges column of the spreadsheets of the Federal Reserve. And they get all this money and all this interest for running a printing press. They're not putting out silver coins. They're not loaning out gold coins. They're loaning out pieces of paper and bits of ink, and that's it. And we are taught to believe by our schools that this represents money, this piece of paper. This is money. This is now the dollar. Forget all about those clunky old coins that your grandfather used to fondle. This piece of paper, this worthless pennies piece of paper, and it costs exactly the same to print a $100 note as it does to print a $1 note. And we're told that's the money, and that's what has worth. And it isn't. It's a unit of debt. All the money in circulation under the Federal Reserve System is the result of a loan at interest. There is no money in circulation. There is only debt.
Okay, let me ask this one more question.
Yeah.
Does bankruptcy mean, and the printing of this money mean, that not only will the federal government really all of the national parks and national fisheries be swallowed up by this debt and claimed as being secured by this debt, but also the states, in case they're in debt, will all the state properties be sold at auction for a dime on the dollar? How about the county and the city's debt? All of these debts are going to leave us as slaves in a country and like a prison planet. Now,
yeah, you absolutely have got it correct, and there's nothing theoretical or claiming about it. Okay, back during the Nixon administration, when the U.S. government was borrowing more money than they were able to collateralize with the gold in Fort Knox, mm-hmm. Richard Nixon decided he was going to use public lands as collateral on the growing national debt. And in order to hide that from the American people,
yeah.
he created the Environmental Protection Agency. And everybody said, huzzah, we have a Republican president who cares about the earth. And over since Nixon's time coming forward, we have all these little programs, heritage rivers, wetlands, roadless wilderness areas, and all these dozens of programs that exist only to conceal the true scale of the land grab by the federal government. And now something like, you know, all of the public lands under the control of the federal government are now pledged as collateral on the national debt.
Yeah.
And it is a nightmare scenario that when the economy collapses and the federal government collapses, that we may see China show up and say, well, look, we own the Grand Canyon now. And it will be up to the government that comes in afterwards to say, actually, no, because there is a principle in international law called the odious debt,
yep.
which says that we, the people, really, ultimately, are only responsible for money borrowed by the government for the benefit of the American people, for the roads, the schools, and the hospitals.
Exactly.
Money borrowed for wars of conquest are considered odious debt. Money borrowed to pay for security systems to keep the American people under dictatorial control are considered odious debt. Money borrowed to give to Israel is considered odious debt. And so when the economy collapses and the federal government collapses, the new government that forms, okay, the very first thing they have to stand up and say is, okay, we reject, we repudiate the debts incurred by the previous government that were spent for all of these purposes that were not for the benefit of the American people themselves. Now, I will make a prediction right now that following the collapse of the economy and the current federal government, we will see no end of carpetbaggers well-funded by the bankers who are going to come in and say, we are honor-bound and duty-bound to pay all the debts of the previous government. No, we aren't. It is an established principle of international law that when a government collapses, the people are only liable for the debts incurred by that government that were incurred for the benefit of the people. Which,
well,
in our case, if you look at the infrastructure around here, is darned little money.
Hmm.
Okay?
Yeah, look, Mike, I've enjoyed what you said there. This has been fun.
Oh, well, good. Glad you like it.
Okay, well, yeah, good night and onward.
Thanks a lot. Bon chance, mon ami. And we're going to switch over to Gloria in New York. Aloha, Gloria. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind? Okay, let's see. It looks like my connection is solid here. Is Gloria in New York there? Okay, thank you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
All right.
The hamster and the little wire wheel fell up, died.
I want to ask about Jim Traffick and why he doesn't run for his president this time.
I think because of his, you know, past prison criminal record, we understand he got railroaded, but the vast majority of American voters are going to look at that as a negative, and I don't think he can get the financial backing to take the run. I would support him if he did. You know, he and Ron Paul together, you know, what a double team that would be. But for practical reasons, I don't think he can.
Oh, my God. I mean, he has the attitude and the right spirit and the right everything that people, the American people need.
I agree with you. And, of course, the reason he got railroaded and thrown in jail is he was trying to stand up and say that,
yes.
you know, the nation is bankrupt and the bankers are doing it. It seems like every time we have a politician who stands up and says there's Wall Street fraud is killing us, they either get thrown in jail or they get hit with a sex scandal or their small airplane falls out of the sky.
But I mean, the people who are aware and awake in America cannot actually start a campaign and bring those together, like you said, the team of Ron Paul and Jim Trafficking and all and more other people, and take it from there. I mean, we still have time.
Well, we do have a lot of time. We're almost, in my opinion, we're starting the 2012 campaign season a little too early. Got almost 2 years to go. Don't we have better things to be doing than going right back into that political game? Isn't our Congress and our president supposed to actually be doing something else other than planning the next campaign? On the other hand, if they're out there political campaigning, maybe they're less able to do any other damage to the rest of the country. So I'm going to take back what I just said. Anything else, Gloria?
No, thank you very much, and I agree with you with the author in French that they start the want not to, to give him some recognition in French about his book, and he well known, and just because he has an anti-Semitic viewpoint, they try to shut everybody their opinion. So I do agree with what you said before.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the phone call, and try and stay warm here because it's going to be a rough, rough few days there on the East Coast. We're going to switch over to Clayton in Austin. Aloha, Clayton. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mike. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, hey, great. Hey, I just wanted to clarify something. This whole thing about the government spending money into circulation and then taxing it back out and having this circle. Why can't the government just put the money out for the people to use without it being debt based? Because there's around 320 million people. Could the government spend enough money to get enough money into circulation for the people to use without it just going on a big spending binge?
Well, technically, I mean, even entitlements and grants are a form of government spending. So we need to be careful of exactly the words that we mean. And there have been presidents who tried to do that, like Abraham Lincoln and John F. Kennedy. John F. Kennedy created $4.5 billion worth of his U.S. notes and spent those into circulation in an effort to bypass the stranglehold of the Federal Reserve. And of course, 5 months later, he got shot. Same thing with Abraham Lincoln, who created his greenbacks and spent those into circulation to fund the Civil War. And they worked so well for the American people, he announced his plan to keep the greenbacks going even after the Civil War was over. But, of course, Abraham Lincoln was shot, and the greenbacks were then taken out of circulation. It's funny how that keeps repeating over and over again.
Yeah, I guess my question is how... Yeah. I mean, like, I think the government spends way too much money on things that it shouldn't be spending money on.
Oh, well, I would agree on that.
If you pulled that back, but you wanted to get back to this money supply that was not debt based, could the government, as long as the money couldn't be inflated and was kept, you know, under control? I mean, could the government just like Kennedy did, just issue it for the people to use for commerce, and then just keep it from inflating and keep it constant?
Okay,
sense of
Kennedy
just
did not just issue it and just throw it out into circulation, and he didn't climb up to the top of the Washington Monument and start hurling buckets of money. What he did was he created the U.S. notes at the U.S. Treasury and told the U.S. Treasury, you will use these to purchase services and goods the federal government needs. They were spent into circulation. In a lot of cases, this was spent through entitlement programs, and charitable contributions, but that's still technically all spending. And what it did do is it freed the American people from dependence and reliance on the private central bank, which, of course, the private central bank did not really take kindly to.
Yeah, I just have a problem with the government creating a bunch of new opportunities to spend money on things just to get money out into circulation. That, to me, seems...
Well, our government doesn't spend money on things just to get money into circulation. It's very easy to get money into circulation. You know, you can buy the things that need to be bought, like good roads and good schools and hospitals. They're not spending the money there at all right now. The money is all being corrupted and spent on pork barrel projects and airport scanners and all these things where the individual politicians are getting a piece of the action. That's the problem with that.
Yeah, it's kind of socialism to me, though. That's my only thing that I'm not understanding about it, is it sounds like one socialist system to get the money out in the circulation, and I'm just trying to understand it a little better.
No, the under socialism, they would just hand the money out to everybody, and that's not how it was designed to work in the United States of America. The government creates the money that it needs and spends it into circulation. It circulates through so that everybody's doing their commerce. So when the government pays you to be a teacher at the school, you get that money from the government. You then go to the store. The store understands that, you know, this is an acceptable form of exchange, and it keeps on circulating until finally somewhere around down the road, it is taxed back to the government to balance out the books. That's how it worked for the first, you know, for the United States of America. And the only difference between the Federal Reserve System and the system that we started this country with is, with the Federal Reserve System, there is a private central bank that is charging interest on all that money. Otherwise, the mechanisms are identical. Okay, we got to take a break for commercials, and we're going to take a break. We'll be back with Karen Tostado after these words from our sponsors.
When I had a heart attack at 42, I was not sure what the future held. But a year later, the doctors could find nothing wrong with me and took me off all my medication. What did I do? I took a herbal mixture of garlic, cayenne, and a few other herbs mixed in liquid form. I now call this Extendovite. I would have never believed that a few simple herbs could actually change my life like they did. Now it's your turn to see what the powers of garlic and cayenne can do for you. For only $69.95 plus shipping and handling for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid, you too can begin on your path to better health. For more information, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Did you read this? Chicago just became the murder capital of America.
I don't understand. It's been a felony to have a gun since 95. I thought that was supposed to prevent murders, not increase them.
Criminals will always find a way to get guns, while the rest of us are just left defenseless.
Chicago authorities have seized over 75,000 firearms since 1995. And now, Chicago's murder rate is twice as high as New York City. Tonight, while you're asleep, criminals will be at work.
Not in Kennesaw, Georgia. In 1982, our city passed a law requiring every household to have a gun. It terrified the criminals, and our violent crime rate is now 75% below the national average. We sleep well here in Kennesaw.
Americans who own guns prevent over 1 million violent crimes every year and save lives. Get the facts. Visit armedandsecure.org. That's armedandsecure.org.
Don't answer it!
If fear strikes your heart when the phone rings, knowing it may be another bill collector, it's time for you to call Zero Debt in 90 Days. 800-477-9256. Settlements, bankruptcy, and attorneys are not the answer and may end up costing you up to 10 times more than necessary. Listen, if you're already in debt, does it make sense to get buried in another payment plan? Zero Debt in 90 Days gets you out of debt in 90 days guaranteed without a payment plan and without attorneys or going to court. Get the fastest relief from debt on the planet when you call 800-477-9256. If you have debt with the IRS, credit cards, student loans, or a foreclosure, we can help at Zero Debt in 90 Days, and we are the only organization to provide written guarantees on the results. Go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. That's ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Or call now for free information. 800-477-9256. That's 800-477-9256.
Some have maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, distract yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're going to talk to Karen Tostado. Aloha, Karen. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind?
Aloha, Michael Rivero, and all your listeners. I just wanted to thank you. I know I'm kind of late in doing this for participating on our last marathon and let you know that finally, after technical problems, all the archives are up and available on UnitedWeStrike.com.
UnitedWeStrike.com.
And also, to remind all your listeners, we're building for another strike, April 15th, 16th, and 17th. That's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of April. We've got about 2.5 months to build. We're also including that V for victory and offering a strike as one of the action plans that we're taking. And so we'd really like to invite everyone to participate this time and really understand that as much money as we can keep out of the system for those 3 days, as much as we can educate ourselves, you know, we keep moving forward in empowering ourselves and taking away power from the insidious corporations and bankers who are behind it all.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. April, that's a long time away. The way things are going between Tunisia and Yemen and Albania and Egypt, by the time April comes around, the United States might be the only country that hasn't fired its government. So we better get on the ball here. We don't want to be left behind by those other countries. We don't want to be, you know, at the rear of the social trend and the fashion. You know, Europe is leading the way. It's now fashionable to be part of the resistance. It's fashionable to hate your government. We got to get with it. This is the 21st century. It's the time of global rebellion and resistance, you know, and, you know, be there or be square.
We're still working on expanding our station, but right now our next broadcast is February 12th, the second Saturday of each month, and the 15th of the month, remember, is the corporate economic boycott and a time to build. Folks, if you're listening to this and if you understand how important it is to come together, see how many people you can include into the strike. How many more people can you talk to between now and next 15th? Can you talk to 25 people? Can you talk to 30 people? We've got to start really standing together because it is a long time. And, Michael, I'll tell you, if we're not incensed now about the Chinese pianist actually playing a song, you know, for our president about killing Americans, come on, I think we could strike for that. I mean,
I think the Chinese pianist was making a point that a lot of people are going to start agreeing with. I think if we want the American people to be angry, I think today's story about the emails that were released as part of a lawsuit against Bear Stearns confirming this whole mortgage-backed security fraud, which led to the seizure of your homes, the confiscation of your homes to protect the bankers from the consequences of their fraud. If that doesn't get you angry, then you had better check your pulse.
Yep, all of it. One on top of the other, you know, and that definitely makes me angry, you know, and paying for the dinner for the Chinese president and for the privilege of being publicly humiliated, you know, it's all just so ridiculous. So ridiculous. And now these foreign trade zones. We have so many reasons to strike. It's, you know, Obamacare. I mean, it is I can't keep up, Michael. You do a much better job of keeping up.
All right. Karen, we're at the end of the show. The music means it's time to sign off the air and give somebody else a chance here on the carrier waves. So we'll be back tomorrow at 2 o'clock in the afternoon here at the Republic Broadcasting Network. Until then, stay safe, stay angry, stay critical, careful of the icy roads, and aloha, America.
The next